Warming temps and heavy rains can spell trouble for your home. Don't wait for a problem. Get a free foundation inspection from PermaSeal. Stay dry, stay protected. For peace of mind, call 800-421-SEAL or visit permaseal.net.
It's over. Game over, man.
It's time for the Chicago Blackhawks postgame show.
Give me the postgame.
On the Blackhawks Radio Network, here's Charlie Remeliotis.
Welcome into the Blackhawks postgame show. Charlie Remeliotis here in our downtown studio at WGN Radio. The Blackhawks fall to the Utah Hockey Club 2-1 at Delta Center. That was a tough one. The Blackhawks, they pushed, man, in the third period. They had a couple chances on that 6-on-5 opportunity, but unfortunately are not able to capitalize. Let's go back to Delta Center and bring in Troy Murray to help us recap this game. Troy, thoughts on the 60 minutes of hockey? I know the scoring chances were very lopsided in favor of Utah, but where did things go sideways in your mind for the Blackhawks?
I thought that they really struggled in their own end of the ice. They just didn't get pucks out, and a lot of pressure from Utah. Give them all the credit in the world because they played desperate and they played with a ton of energy. Hawks just fought it all night long. It just, you know, it didn't seem like they got any momentum, any rhythm in this game. They did get on the scoreboard first, and they tried. It was tough for them, but that late goal by Keller at the end of the second period, you know, not saying it's the difference, but it gave Utah the belief that they could get one past the Hawks goaltender Soderblom, who played so well in this game. They just didn't create many opportunities. They didn't have much offensive zone time, and they really struggled to get pucks out of their own end. They just no execution in this game, and they 2-1 is a very flattering score in this game.
Yeah, Arvid Soderblom was the number one star of this game for the Blackhawks specifically. I mean, if it's not for him, this game easily could have gotten out of hand.
Yeah, that's just the way it was. I just didn't feel like they had it in this game. And even though they were leading and it was the power play goal, but they weren't generating anything. They weren't spending any time in the offensive zone. You got to get, you know, puck possession in the offensive zone. You got to be able to cycle it down low and execute some plays. But they just didn't do it. A lot of it was one and done. And again, I got to give Utah a lot of credit. If they had lost this game, I'm sure that their head coach would say, you know, we're gonna play that style of game and we're gonna win a bunch of them. They were that dominant in this game, and for the Hawks, very frustrating. There were times where they just, you know, they mishandled pucks. They didn't get pucks out of the zone. Utah was very aggressive with their defensemen coming down the boards, and I don't know if it surprised some of the players, but you know, you got to win those battles, and Utah won the 50-50 puck battles basically all night long.
Utah finished with 36 shots on goal, which doesn't seem like a ton, but you look at their shot attempts, 93, which is tied for the second most the Blackhawks have given up in a game this season.
Yeah, who was the most? Throw that one at me.
Who was the most? Are you talking about in the game or individually?
Yeah, I mean, you said shot attempts.
Yeah. This season?
Yeah.
Yeah. It was the Oilers game on October 12th. That was 96.
Okay. Yeah.
The Hawks won that game, ironically, 5-2.
That I think is a much better indication even than the 36-22 shots on goal. You know, there wasn't a lot of dangerous. I mean, you mentioned a push in the third period, but that was in the last 2 minutes of the game. I mean, other than that, I mean, you know, they were battling hard. They were battling hard, and Utah scored. But they didn't reverse it. A lot of times if you're defending, you're just going to try and get away with something, maybe get it into overtime and then, you know, take your chances with that. But the Hawks just didn't generate anything until they got Soderblom on the bench, and then they had some good opportunities. I think they had a flurry of shots right there at the end. Nazar had a chance, Bertuzzi was right there. You know, unfortunately for the Hawks, it a little bit too late.
The Blackhawks, they scored the first goal in this hockey game on the power play, but they committed three penalties in the first period. It kind of got, I think, like Colton Dock only had three shifts in the first period because everyone's rotations was out of whack because of they were spending so much time on the PK.
Yeah, and it was, you know, you got to be disciplined. But I think, again, you know, the penalties in the first period were caused because Utah was skating, and they caused problems. And then you're reacting. You're not the initiator. You're the, you know, you're behind the play, and you end up getting, you know, three minor penalties in the first period. The one real bright side was the Hawks' penalty kill in this game, and Soderblom was excellent as far as, you know, you need good goaltending to have strong penalty killing, but they worked hard on the penalty kill, but it took away from a lot of the flow, and it gave Utah, even though they didn't score, it gave them a lot of momentum. And for the Hawks, you mentioned, I mean, get out of the rotation. You got penalty killers out there. I was saying Foligno was out there with Nazar and Bertuzzi. You know, everything kind of gets all messed up when you have the penalty kill. And five penalties in the game is too much. Joe Quenneville used to talk about three penalties. If you go over that, you're in trouble. That's for the entire game, not in one period. So the Hawks did an excellent job on the penalty kill. But it gave Utah a lot of opportunities and got them to feel the puck and feel good about their game. Hawks on the flip side, though, you know, they didn't get many power play opportunities, but they capitalized again. The goal by Jones, an excellent individual effort by him to score that goal. Confusion created between him and Bedard at a little bit of a crisscross out near the blue line there. And Jones walks in and beats the goaltender.
I know, Seth, it's hard for an individual to stand out in a game like this when the ice was really tilted in Utah's favor. But I thought Seth Jones overall did have a solid game. I think 8 shot attempts, 5 hits, 4 block shots. He did have 3 giveaways, but I thought he was noticeable in this game, and especially that with that power play goal.
Yeah, if there was one guy that I liked in this game, it was Seth Jones on the blue line there. He played some big minutes, and you know, these are big games for Seth, and you know, if you look at him and what he wants to do and you know, go to a contending team and you know, I've got my thoughts on that, and but that's an individual, you know, preference that he decided to, you know, make it very transparent about what was going on, the talks with Kyle Davidson, with the Blackhawks, where they are moving forward. But, you know, if he wants to get moved, he's got to, you know, show some of these teams. There were 18 scouts at this game tonight, and they weren't here looking at Utah. Because Utah's, you know, they could be a buyer, not a seller, where they are right now. You know, the scouts were here to look at the Blackhawks and certain players, and I'm sure, and I'm positive, because I know, that teams were looking at Seth Jones in this game. So, you know, the next five games before the deadline, I think it's 5 now. You know, these are important games for him. So there was some motivation in this game for him, and I thought he was one guy that stuck out there, and he, you know, he played well in that goal that he scored. Anybody who's in the building looking at him and go, wow, you know, there's a Seth Jones play that we could certainly use moving forward into the postseason.
Yeah, and when you're Seth, when you go public with this and double down on it, it was obviously a calculated decision for him to want to push the needle to try to get moved before March 7th. I still feel, Troy, that it's going to be a really hard deal to do before the March 7th trade deadline, but now that it's out there, you wonder how much does that move the needle if you're the Blackhawks or Seth Jones?
Well, it's got to be the right deal. It's got to be the right fit. I know that, you know, Seth wants to get moved, and that's his prerogative, and I'm, you know, well within his rights to do that, and he's not doing anything behind the closed doors. He's very open with it, as you said there. But if it doesn't make sense for the Blackhawks and Kyle Davidson, whether, you know, he agrees with it or not, he has to do the best thing for the Blackhawks. That's his job. That's the way that he needs to approach this. And if it's not the right deal before the trade deadline, well, maybe you have to wait for going into the summer, or, you know, have some more conversations with Seth as you move into the, you know, free agency and stuff like that. But Kyle's got to, you know, he's got to do what is the right thing for this team. And there's a lot of teams that are looking at this. Some teams are going to have to get very creative with his salary cap and what's left, you know, moving forward, is lengthen his contract. So there's all kinds of things that need to be. And if it's a team that has been a contender and they've kind of cleaned the cupboards in a lot of ways, like the Blackhawks did, by making moves at the trade deadline, is there teams that want Seth that have something in return that Kyle Davidson and the Blackhawks think that can help them down the road, because this is a big asset. This is, you know, one of the biggest pieces that they have, and they have to get this deal right if they're going to move him.
For sure. Yeah, it's going to be a fascinating storyline to follow the next week and a half. Last one for you, Troy. I know the big storyline going into this game was Connor Bedard reuniting with Frank Nazar and Tyler Bertuzzi on the top line. It just wasn't noticeable enough that you wanted from Bedard, especially thinking he only had one shot attempt and didn't have a single shot on goal.
Yeah, and the shot attempt came in the last 30 seconds of the game, I believe. So, you know, not a good game by Bedard. You know, a struggle, and he's going to have to learn. Learning curve is what they talked about. You had Del Mastro and Nolan out there, you know, a very young, inexperienced defense pairing, and tough for them to, you know, in a game like this. The NHL game is a lot faster than the American League game, and they're going to have to, you know, figure it out. But again, it's a learning curve, and for Bedard, you know, he's still a young player, only 19 years of age. There's a lot for him to learn, and he's going to get better, and I would expect him to be better in that game against Vegas, but it just wasn't that line's night. And, you know, you're hoping that something clicks, that heads in the right direction, but they just didn't get it that way tonight.
How excited are you that I get to join you in Vegas on Thursday?
Hey, look at the time. I got I got a bus to catch.
All right. I set that up for myself. Just make some room for me in the radio booth in Vegas. Make sure you're not spreading out too much where I get my own station.
You can be the sideline reporter for our radio broadcast.
Perfect. Yeah, you'll stick me in the corner and make sure that you make my my job pretty difficult. That's actually one of my favorite arenas in the entire NHL. So I'm looking forward to going back to Vegas.
Yeah. And what time do you get in tomorrow?
We have a 7 a.m. flight.
I have to leave
in about 3 hours. No, I'm kidding.
Well, we'll see you at some point tomorrow, if not on Thursday.
Yes, there you go. All right, Troy, all right. Safe travels.
All right, thanks, Charlie.
All right, that is the great Troy Murray. Hawks fall to the Utah Hockey Club 2-1. We got some post-game sound rolling in from the Blackhawks locker room. It looks like Seth Jones spoke to the media, and Ryan Donato also spoke to the media. Ironically, two players that probably 18 of those scouts that were in attendance for Utah tonight, we're probably looking at closely ahead of the March 7 trade deadline. So we got more Blackhawks postgame show that's going to roll on after this on 720 WGN.
Seth Jones holding the puck into the left circle. Shoots! He scores! Power play goal! And the Hawks take a 1-0 lead out here in Utah. Defenseman Seth Jones let it rip. That's career goal number 97. Power play goal, 1-0 Hawks.
Back here on the Blackhawks postgame show, Charlie Romeliotis here. The Blackhawks fall to the Utah Hockey Club 2-1. The lone goal by Chicago. Brett, we can lower that music now. The lone goal by Chicago in this one was Seth Jones. That was his 97th career NHL goal. Looking at the final numbers, we were talking about the shot attempts. 93 for the Utah Hockey Club. 39 for the Blackhawks. So a massive discrepancy there. The shots were 36-22 in favor of Utah. Scoring chances, let's do 5-on-5 specifically, was 40-5. That's probably as lopsided of a scoring chance differential that you'll see in the NHL this season. Scoring chances specifically in the third period at 5-on-5 were 15-0 in favor of Utah. So it was a real busy night for Arvid Soderblom, who was terrific. But Seth Jones scores his seventh goal of the season. He's now, that's his fourth goal in 12 games, and he's got 7 goals in 41 this year. Last year, he had 8 goals in 67 games. His career high is 16, which he set in the 17-18 season with Columbus. So he's off to he's had a nice season so far. Obviously, he had that stretch where it was that Calgary game where things went really sideways for him, but feels like since then, Seth has been playing much better hockey as of late. And again, it's going to be a fascinating discussion between now and the March 7 trade deadline next Friday to see where Seth Jones is, if he's still wearing a Blackhawk sweater. Speaking of Seth, he spoke to the media a little bit ago. Let's hear what he had to say about this 2-1 loss to Utah.
It's the same thing that's been going on all season.
Meaning?
We put ourselves in tough situations out there by turning pucks over and forcing somebody to make 40 saves. you know, and stand on a set to even have a chance.
I think the scoring chances were something along the lines of 50 to 11 or something, at least into the last few minutes. Is what was so tough to kind of get any possession or pace in that game?
Refusing to play simple and turning pucks over, not just forwards, it's everybody. Defensemen, we weren't very good on the breakouts tonight. And like I said, so he's got to stand on his head to even, you know, we have no business being in that game.
Why do you think it's happening? What, I mean, obviously you guys are... put a lot of thought into working on this, but what needs to change for this ever to, I guess, to right itself?
I don't know. You know, I think we're the exact same team right now as we were at game one. And I think it's pretty evident out there. We haven't made any strides to be a better, more simple hockey team, you know. And it shows, you know, we don't get a lot of wins because of that.
This is kind of an opportunity to gauge that since you started here and now 60 games and almost you're back here again.
Well, this is in almost 4 years of, you know, bottom of the league, so it's not just this year, for me at least.
Isn't it also hard, you know, five penalties, you know, to stay on the ice?
It doesn't help. It's, like I said, it puts a ton of pressure on Sody. It just kills momentum. You know, we if you have one or two good shifts in a row and then you take a penalty, you know, we had three in the first, two in the second. I don't know if we had one in the third. 10 minutes is a long time on the kill. You don't get the flow of the guys going offensively. Now guys have to sit, and then it's tough to get anything going. So definitely staying out of the box is key. But I'll say it again. I mean, Sody was unbelievable. We have zero chance of winning if he doesn't stand on his head.
On your power play goal, you know, when you switched up with Bedard, a lot of times you'll hand off to him. What made you decide to keep it that time?
I think team's always dangerous. Both guys kind of went to him. I tried to bait it a little bit, and they both bit on that. And so I decided to take one to the net. It was a great screen by Bert. We've talked about movement a little bit over the past, you know, since the break, just trying to get more things going when they get stagnant. And so that's what I tried to do there.
That was Blackhawks defenseman Seth Jones. Also, thanks to Ben Pope of the Chicago Sun-Times for providing that audio. Seth was one of the rare bright spots in this hockey game. I know the scoring chances don't look great when he was on the ice, but he logged 25-plus minutes of ice time. He had a shooting-type mentality, especially on the power play. Even before his goal, I think he had three shot attempts. A couple of them were blocked. One of them missed the net, and then he finally capitalized on the fourth shot of that power play and found the back of the net. We had mentioned earlier that there were 18 scouts in attendance for this game. There were two scouts from the Dallas Stars, which I think is a team to watch to potentially get into the Seth Jones sweepstakes. When Seth Jones had requested a trade out of Columbus, the two teams that he wanted to go to or would have signed a long-term deal with was Chicago and Dallas. And obviously, it ended up being Chicago signs a long-term deal, but if Dallas could somehow make the money work, they have Miro Heiskanen on LTIR, and if he's out for the rest of the regular season, they'll be able to fit Seth Jones's cap hit, whatever the salary retention is, if Chicago even does retain it. Again, they're going to have to get creative if that's not the case, but Dallas could be a team to watch for potentially acquiring Seth Jones ahead of the March 7 trade deadline. I will say they do have a couple of young guys that they're going to have to pay in the near future. Wyatt Johnston at the end of this year is a pending RFA. Thomas Harley after next season is going to be a pending UFA. So there are some financial hurdles, but they do have Jamie Benn coming off the books, Michael Granlund, depending on if they re-sign him. Evgeny Dodonov is coming off. So there are some pieces on Dallas's roster that are going to be removed from next year's lineup that could potentially make it work. But just thought it was interesting to see that there were 18 scouts in the building and one of two teams had two of them and Dallas was one of them. So again, something to monitor between now and the March 7 trade deadline. The other guy that's likely going to get a lot of attention between now and next Friday is Ryan Donato, who was held off the score sheet. I'm sorry, he got an assist on the Seth Jones goal, but he's been awesome this year, flirting with 60 points in a bottom six role. With four games left between now and Friday, he's got a few more opportunities to make an impression, and so we'll see if Ryan is a Blackhawk or if he's going to get moved, and if so, where he's going to get moved. He also spoke to the media after Seth Jones. Let's listen in and see what Donato had to say about this 2-1 loss.
How do you assess that game?
Great game by Sody. I don't know. It's tough. you know, games are just going to get harder, especially at this point in the year. Teams are making their playoff pushes, right? And this team was desperate, and, you know, they came away with a win. We just got to show up and, you know, put forth a great effort, you know, a full 60 minutes and, you know, try and get a win.
What made it so challenging to even get through the neutral zone today?
I don't know. I haven't really got to watch them, obviously, the clips yet. But, you know, obviously they're a team that's, you know, pretty disciplined. A lot of guys with good sticks. So I think that has something to do with it. And, you know, I think just a little bit of managing pucks on our end, just making sure we're doing the right thing with the red line and, you know, forcing them to, you know, play defense.
Are you seeing the effort, the desperation you'd like to see from this group? Or do you, I guess, not seeing enough of that either?
No, I think, I mean, we're a young group, right? So I think a lot of guys are learning what it takes. And, you know, I don't know how many young guys you have on a team that have played against teams that are desperate for points, you know what I mean, trying to get those points to make a playoff push. And, you know, it's a hard there's some hard lessons to learn in that, but I think, you know, there was definitely a lot of effort tonight. We just gotta find a way to get more on the score sheet.
It was a huge scoring advantage for Utah, especially in the third period. What do you attribute to that?
I mean, that's a hard question, right? I wish we had the answer. You know, keep on praying that Sodi makes some big saves and, you know, hopefully we get some bounces the other way and, you know, get some momentum off that.
All right, that was Blackhawks forward Ryan Donato talking about the 2-1 loss. Clearly, Arvid Soderblom was the story of the game for the Blackhawks, and we're going to get to him on the other side when we hear his save of the game, and we'll also hear from Blackhawks interim head coach Anders Sorensen coming up right here on 720 WGN.
Smith at the Utah line, trying to fire it across. Carcone picks it off, breaking back into the Hawks zone. He'll fire, and Soderblom down with a butterfly save. We'll hold on to the puck, and a whistle will stop play. An errant pass from in front of the Hawks bench, nearly costly, but Arvid Soderblom shut the door.
That was tonight's save of the game, which is sponsored by the ComEd Energy Efficiency Program. Learn more at comed.com/poweringbiz. Arvid Soderblom was unbelievable for the Blackhawks. Faced only 36 shots, which felt like so much, felt much higher than that when you factor in the 93 shot attempts that Utah had. But 36 of them hit the net. Arvid stopped 34 for a save percentage of .944. His goals saved above expected, according to Natural Stat Trick, 2.76. which is a ridiculously elite number for Arvid. So he was terrific. I also thought it was noteworthy that the Blackhawks went back to him after the Toronto game. That's now his sixth start in the last nine games. So Arvid has really earned the net. Peter Mrazek has been playing much better as of late. You know, if you look at, I know he had that real struggle like the month and a half after he left for personal reasons and then came back and he was really struggling. But Arvid Soderblom has not done anything to not get some runway and show what he can do as the potential 1A of the starter for the Blackhawks. So nice to see the Blackhawks leaning on Arvid. I imagine Mrazek will get the Vegas game and Arvid will finish off in Anaheim, because Soderblom had that unbelievable game against the Anaheim Ducks earlier this year where he made like 40 plus saves, and I think he stopped like more than four goals saved above expected. So he's been great. Yeah, if it wasn't for him in this game, this probably could have gotten ugly much sooner, especially in that first period when Utah had three power plays. Although I will say the Hawks did a pretty good job of penalty killing in that period. But counterpart Kiro Vemelka, 21 saves on 22 shots for a .955 save percentage, improves now to 4-0-1, I think, against the Blackhawks. So he's had Chicago's number and was the winning goaltender for the Utah Hockey Club in this game. Blackhawks interim head coach Anders Sorensen, let's listen and see what he had to say about this loss to open up a three-game road trip for the Blackhawks.
A lot of penalties, right? A lot of penalty trouble kind of wore some guys out and put us on their heels a lot, right? So that was a big part of it, I thought.
It seemed like 5-on-5, you know, just not able to create much offense against the zone. What do you see that they would do under you guys? What would
you like
to do?
Yeah, they were stifling us. You know, they were kind of, you know, they were staying above us a lot, so we didn't find a lot of space there. And then we did have some space. I don't think we made the plays maybe quick enough that we need to make.
How did you like Bedard's new line? I mean, I know there wasn't a lot overall, but
I think it's hard to judge after that game because we didn't create much. We, you know, like I said, there was a lot of penalties, and they never really got into rhythm, I didn't think. So I thought in the third period they were better.
Seth was saying that he feels like this team hasn't really made many strides just from the start of the year to now, and you obviously weren't here the first 2 months, but do you feel like there's been strides made?
I think certain areas, yeah.
How about the Del Mastro, at least during the second period, you seem like physical.
Yeah, I thought he was good. He battled hard. I thought he took initiatives too with the puck. And, I liked this game.
Donald mentioned just how young you guys are and them learning into the desperation going up against a team who's fighting for a playoff spot. How much do you, I guess, lean on that? Is, you know, what's happening out there, or, you know, I guess, how much of a factor is that here?
Yeah, I mean, that is a learning curve, right? You can tell, right? And these guys are, you know, fighting for a playoff spot. And, you got to learn that the desperation is going to be, especially on the road, right? You know where they were coming. I thought the first period we were fine. And then, you know, again, the penalties are just, you know, there were so many. It was just hard to get in the rhythm in general. And that's also a learning curve for young guys. If you're maybe don't play in the rhythm, you're not playing regularly there, then, you got to find a way to stay mentally in the game, you know?
Do you feel like Bedard kind of doesn't draw as many penalties as he should, or just doesn't get the benefit of the doubt from the refs? I mean, he threw the one, but there was also the one on Sergachev that could have been called, and it just seems like that's a common story a lot of nights.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's, yeah, maybe at times, yeah. You know, I thought there was a couple through the neutral zone as well. Today he got hooked and held a little bit, but yeah.
What about Soderblom, you know, to face all the scoring chances that he faced?
He was good. He was great. Yeah, kept us in, especially on the PK again, right? Like, he made some big saves, but even 5-on-5, he was really good.
That was Blackhawks interim head coach Anders Sorensen talking about the 2-1 loss to Utah. He's talking about how the Blackhawks were struggling to get into a rhythm of the hockey game because the Hawks had committed 3 penalties in the first period, and so the ice time was kind of skewed. Like, I saw the first period ice time, and through one period, Colton Dock, who was recalled before this 3-game road trip, had only 3 shifts, and it was like a minute and 20 of ice time. And so he barely saw the ice. I think Connor Bedard was close to like 4 minutes of ice time in the first period. And so when 6 of the 20 minutes are spent on the kill, it's really hard to get into a flow of the hockey game. And it was unfortunate too, because Connor Bedard was a game where he was reuniting with Frank Nazar and Tyler Bertuzzi on the top line. And I think that was as much as the Anders trying to get Connor and Bertuzzi going together. Like, I don't think it was one or the other. Bertuzzi's now, that's 11 straight games where he hasn't found the back of the net. Connor Bedard in the Toronto game did not have a single shot attempt through the first 40 minutes of hockey. And then in this game, he finishes with only 1 shot attempt, and it came literally in the final 40 seconds of the game during the 6-on-5 opportunity, and I think it was the blocked shot. And so Connor's now gone 3 straight without a point. He was 0-for-6 in the faceoff circle as well. That was an area that he was making strides in. And so difficult for the Blackhawks to generate any sort of momentum. I will say this. I thought the officiating was a little bit off today, and not that I ever want to play that card, but like, it played a significant role in this game, but the Hawks had 3 penalties in this game where I thought were pretty ticky-tacky. The holding penalty on Nazar, he looked a little confused. The roughing penalty on Connor Murphy after the hit on Connor Bedard by Mikhail Sergachev that went uncalled. And then later on, the Alex Vlasic roughing penalty in the third period, thought it was a little bit of a weak call. It looked like, I can't remember who the player was, but it looked like it was his own glove and stick that hit him up high. And so, obviously the Blackhawks have to be a little bit more disciplined, but I thought the officiating was a lopsided game in the officiating department, and the Blackhawks didn't really have the benefit of the doubt. But again, when the shot attempts are 93-39, the officiating is probably not the problem. And speaking of Colton Dock, I forgot to mention he finished with 7 minutes and 29 seconds of ice time, 4 hits. You know, so he did throw his body around in the shifts that he did, but you probably wish he would have gotten more closer to above 10 minutes of ice time, just for him to feel into the game and make his physical presence known. With the loss for Chicago in this game, they're now 2-15-3 in their last 20 road games. a minus 31 goal differential over that span. That's two road wins in the last 20 games for Chicago. They had a strong start to the year. There were 4-4-1 in the first 9 road games with a minus 1 goal differential. So a tough way to open up a 3-game road trip. It's not going to get any easier with Vegas next on the schedule. But hopefully the Blackhawks can bounce back. And we're actually going to preview that game on the other side. But I also want to share what happened with a Blackhawks prospect earlier today and the goal that he scored over in the OHL. Don't want to miss it. That's coming up next. Listening to the Blackhawks postgame show on 720 WGN. Back here on the Blackhawks postgame show, the Hawks fall to the Utah Hockey Club 2-1 to open up a 3-game road trip. Let's get to some positives of the night, shall we? Blackhawks prospect Jack Pridham, he scored 2 goals in the OHL game tonight for the Kitchener Rangers, and one of them was on the Michigan. He pulled off the lacrosse-style goal. It went viral earlier today while the Blackhawks game was going on. Pridham has had a really nice year for the Kitchener Rangers. He's projected for 55 points in 49 games. But, man, a really pretty goal. He was drafted in the 3rd round this past draft, number 92 overall. So, yeah, highlight reel goal by Jack Pridham, Blackhawks prospect. Also wanted to shout out some league news from earlier today. Alex Ovechkin scored again for the Washington Capitals, and he is now 12 goals away from passing Wayne Gretzky's all-time NHL record. When Ovechkin broke his leg and was out for a month, the month prior, I thought for sure we probably weren't going to see him hit this record this year. It was too tight of a runway, but he's turned in an unbelievable second half of the season. He had a hat trick on Sunday against Edmonton, scored again today, and he's now 12 away. This now puts him on pace to break the record on April 4th, which is against the Chicago Blackhawks in Washington. And if you remember, Alex Ovechkin hit the 800th career goal mark in Chicago at the United Center, where I believe it was a hat-trick goal, because I went inside the Washington Capitals locker room after that game, and his locker room stall was showered with hats. And so the Grade 8 continues to impress. At this point, it doesn't feel like if he's going to do it by the end of the season. It's just a matter of when, barring any health circumstances. So great to see Ovechkin continuing to perform. It's been fun to follow. And also scored his 30th goal of the season tonight. And now 19 of 20 seasons, he's hit the 30-goal mark. So he's scored at least 30 in every single season but one. The only one he didn't was the 2020-21 season, which was the shortened bubble that was, I think it was a 56-game year season. He only played in 45 games that year and scored 24 goals. So Alex Ovechkin continues to produce for the Washington Capitals, and it's going to be exciting down the stretch to watch Ovechkin chase Wayne Gretzky, because I believe the NHL is already on record saying that Wayne Gretzky and the NHL commissioner Gary Bettman will start to follow around Alex Ovechkin once they start to get to, you know, I'm sure it's going to be like 5 goals or within 5 goals, and he can do it at any moment. So it's been fun to watch. All right, last thing. Let's get to our next game preview, which is sponsored by Plumbers 911 Chicago, where they do it right the first time. Hawks are going to be in Vegas on Thursday night, a 9 p.m. Central puck drop at T-Mobile Arena. The Vegas Golden Knights, they lead the Pacific Division with 74 points. It's a ho-hum year for Vegas. Every year they seem to churn out the same team, same elite team in the Western Conference. They're 8th in goals per game, 7th in goals against, 4th in power play percentage. Their Achilles heel is, weirdly enough, their penalty kill, which is 21st. So it's not terrible, just kind of a middle of the pack or just subpar at 76.9%. The one interesting signing that they made a few weeks ago was Brandon Saad, former Blackhawk. He had a mutual contract termination with the St. Louis Blues, walked away from 5.5 $4.25 million to sign a 1 year, $1.5 million with Vegas, because all he wanted to do was sign with a contender and have a chance to win another Stanley Cup. Obviously, he has a few with the Chicago Blackhawks, but for him to walk away from essentially a $4 million difference just to want to have another chance at a Stanley Cup, you have to, I guess, admire the risk that he took and also his competitive desire to want to win one more. He's got 3 points, 2 goals, 1 assist in 6 games with Vegas. He's averaging 14.51 of ice time. So he's been playing more of in the third line role, kind of a bottom six guy. But hopefully for Saad's sake, we get to watch him in the playoffs, and we'll see how deep of a run Vegas could make this year. But the Hawks are going to have a big, big test on Thursday at T-Mobile Arena. Blackhawks Hockey is sponsored by Plumbers 911 Chicago, where they do it right the first time, your Chicago and Northwest Indiana Hyundai dealers, Circa Sports Illinois, United Airlines, and Citgo. When you start with Citgo, you're good to go. That's going to do it for the broadcast tonight. Big thanks to our production crew of Jack Heinrich and Patrick Hennessy. They were led by our engineer, the fearless Colonel Brett Jackson. For John Weideman and Troy Murray, who brought you the call from Utah, I'm Charlie Romeliotis, signing off after a 2-1 Blackhawks loss to the Hockey Club. Thanks for being with us, and we'll talk to you on Thursday night from Vegas.